Professor Nelson, tell us about this painting.
Well, the painting was made in 1786 by a French-Canadian artist, actually born in Quebec, and his name was François Malpart de Beaucourt. And what's particularly interesting is that it's one of the, it's kind of a rarity to have a fully finished professionally rendered painting of a slave. Because, you know, for obvious reasons then, the sitter or the person represented in a portrait is most customarily the person who commissioned the portrait. But when you have a slave then, who by definition was someone else's property and was denied the right, generally speaking, to accumulate wealth, the slave most certainly in most portraits then would not be the patron. So they're not the one who asked for the portrait of themselves to be made. So that's a really unique or odd facet of this painting.
What do we see in the portrait?
So the portrait is of a dark-skinned black female sitter, and it's important that I do mention her complexion for reasons that are connected to her specific enslavement. But it's a dark-skinned black woman who's wearing a head tie, which is a West African tradition that survived the Middle Passage, that blacks in diaspora who had been enslaved actually kept up with this practice. So she's wearing a specific and rather beautiful red and yellow head tie, but also she's wearing a white blouse, and one of her breasts is deliberately outside of the blouse and juxtaposed with a tray of tropical fruit.
What does the portrait tell us?
Well, I should point out that not only is a slave as a sitter a rarity and an oddity, but the fact that she's portrayed with her breast out of her shirt is a very bizarre thing in terms of the way that white women would have been represented at the same moment in 18th century or even 19th century portraiture. Because for white women to be exposed in that way, a real white woman, as opposed to a Venus, let's say an allegory, it would have been deemed to be hypersexualizing and pornographic, and it would have been removed or refused from the realm of high art. The reason why she was allowed to be represented with her breasts exposed is really because she was an enslaved woman, and within slavery, Europeans and Euro-Americans throughout different sites of slavery around the world actually imposed a matrilineal order on slaves, which meant that any child born to an enslaved woman, in this case we have a woman of African descent, would, regardless of the status or the race of the father, automatically become a slave. So the child followed the lineage or the status of the mother. So what happened within slavery is that rape became institutionalized as a means for white male and female slave owners to increase their wealth, because they literally owned the children of their slaves.
What questions does this portrait raise about slavery in Canada?
Well, it raises a lot because François Malpart de Beaucourt and his wife Benoît Gaétan, who he met and married while he was studying in Bordeaux in France, okay, when they returned to Quebec, which is 1792, we know of his return, by the way, because he placed an ad in the Montreal Gazette in June of 1792. But at that time, a scholar named Marcel Trudel, he is a 20th century scholar, or was a 20th century scholar, he's since passed away, but he determined that François and his wife in Montreal, upon the return, owned two black slaves, one woman and one man. So in doing research on the portrait in 2004, I was able to determine that the woman represented in this portrait, which was handed down to us by the title of Portrait of a Negro Slave, that the woman was most likely Marie-Thérèse Zemire, which was the slave that François and his wife owned. So at the time, though, she would have likely been a teenager of about 15 years old, and she lived out the rest of her life in Montreal, owned by these two, until 1800 when she died. But the interesting thing it really tells us as well is that a lot of the enslaved people who ended up in parts of what are today known as Canada actually came not from the States, but also from the Caribbean. So we're very accustomed in Canada of thinking of African-American slaves who fled here, especially during the Underground Railroad, at a time when we had already abolished slavery in the British Empire as a part of the British Empire, which was 1834. But we often, as historians, as art historians, as scholars, we have not done enough research on the Caribbean trajectories of the enslaved people who ended up in Canada. And a large population of them would have been forced onto cargo ships, merchant ships, that were headed for ports like Halifax and Montreal with things like rum, sugar, molasses, and, for instance, about 5, 10, 15 slaves, as opposed to the hundreds that would be arriving at ports like Jamaica, Trinidad, Haiti, etc.
There are probably many Canadians who are not even aware that Canada had a slave trade.
Absolutely, you're correct. I found in my own teaching, for instance, I'm teaching a class at the moment, which I've taught for 10 years now, a class called The Visual Culture of Slavery. And I always start the class by polling the students. And I should point out that my students usually have like 70 students, and about 30% of them will be American. So I'll ask them, and the vast majority of the rest will be Canadian and a few from other countries. But I always ask the students, okay, so how many of you even know about any location, any site of Trans-Atlantic slavery coming into this class? And usually all of their hands go up. But then I'll say to the Canadians, put your hands down if the sites that you've heard of are not Canadian. So they're all their hands go down. So what happens is that the Canadian students eventually reveal to me that they've all been trained in a recitation of the narrative of the Underground Railroad, which basically is a way that Canadians have heroized themselves as the liberators of African-American slaves. But the Underground Railroad actually only happened between 1834, when Britain forced Canada to abolish slavery, or what is now Canada, and 1861, that's the end of the American Civil War. It was just a 30-year period. But the 200-plus years before that, when Canadians were also participating in transatlantic slavery, both the French and the British, none of us are taught that. And that's myself included. I did kindergarten till master's degree in Canada. And really, when I learned about slavery was as an alternative education that came to me from my Jamaican-born parents. So I learned about it in the home, but only because my parents were very critical and very conscious that it's not something that I would have gotten from the Canadian education system.
So I guess something that really should be added to the things that are taught during Black History Month.
Absolutely. And, you know, really throughout the year, because as I say to my students as well, slavery is not a black history. The slaves themselves were of African descent, but the slave owners, the ship's captains, you know, the merchants were white. And also, too, quite a few abolitionists were white. So the fact that slavery has been transformed into a so-called black history is a retroactive shift from the reality of what the actual practice looked like for 400 years. Because, of course, white histories are implicated in slavery because white people were the dominant enslavers of Africans. So I asked the students, too, you know, what would it take for you, because the majority of my students at McGill are white, I asked them, what would it take for you to understand slavery as your history, not as the history of the black student sitting beside you?
Fascinating. Thank you so much for telling us about this.
Oh, thank you for having me.